Iguodala to Curry, back to Iguodala, up for the layup. Oh, it's blocked by James. LeBron James with the rejection.
That's right, it is the Chase Down with me, Justin Rowan, and my co-host, Carter Rodriguez, part of the Almighty Baller Radio Network, as well as Dash Radio. Carter, how are you doing today?
I'm doing lovely. Let's talk about the Cleveland Cavaliers.
Oh, man, I was going to talk about the Celtics, seeing as they're now the number one seed.
Oh, well, I guess we could do that, too.
I mean, they are now the clear contender. They're, it's actually funny. I saw, not to rag on anybody, but I'm going to do that anyways. I saw an article, and it was Dark Horse contenders to make the finals out of the East, and they listed the Celtics, and I'm like, eh. Like, I agree, but it's kind of funny when they are the number one seed.
Yeah, but that is just kind of the reality. But, like, also, like, I don't know. It's just kind of the way it's going to be until LeBron finally doesn't make the finals, that literally, if you're not on LeBron's team, you're just the dark horse. Yeah, they're the one seed. We'll see if they stay that way. It's weird. It's kind of not in the Cavs' control, but it also is.
Yeah.
If they decide to suit up for that Boston game. Is it in Boston? I'm not looking at
it. It is in Boston. They host Orlando tonight. We're recording this on a Tuesday morning. So they host Orlando, and then they travel to Boston. So my assumption would be...
A-plus research from me.
Well, my assumption would be that if they're going to rest anybody, they're going to rest LeBron against the Magic and then have him suit up against the Celtics. Although, as you mentioned before, Ty Lue does kind of like going with the Popovich model of going for the sure win.
Yeah. I think that what's going to happen is that they're going to play against the Magic. They're going to rest against the Celtics, and everyone's going to lose their minds. But I wouldn't be surprised if everyone played on Wednesday night. I just think that this might be a game the Cavs kind of want to win.
Yeah, I think they want to send a message.
And it's also, I mean, it's kind of like, remember the game against Houston, that like back-and-forth classic against the Rockets when it was on the second half of a back-to-back?
Right.
When kind of everyone thought they were going to rest, and they just didn't, and it was kind of a big surprise. Like, I think Lou isn't, like, full pop where he just sees no value in these things, in these kinds of games.
Yeah.
And plus, like, if you rest against the Celtics, you're pretty much conceding the one seed. Is that, do you agree with that statement?
Yeah, I think that's fair, because Boston, we know they're going to continue being a bunch of tryhards, and, yeah, the Cavs are probably going to rest on the last night of the season anyways. Like, I really don't see them suiting up against Toronto, so we can just go ahead and call that a loss. So at that point, there just isn't really a clear path to getting the number one seed unless Boston really drops the ball.
Yeah, they'll be giving it away. And, like, that's kind of why I thought it was the idea of them not, like, the idea of them resting against the Magic then playing against the Celtics is probably the dumbest option. Because...
Really?
Yeah, I really think that. Because if you lose to the Magic, and, like, even if the Cavs try, like, it's still not a perfect situation. You're still traveling. You're still jet-lagged. Like, it's not a pure, like... It's not like you had 4 days off and then played the Magic. Or then played the Celtics. Like, they could still lose against the Celtics. They're in Boston. Boston's tough to win in. So even if the Cavs do try, it's not like they're guaranteed to win. So you're conceding it for no reason.
I'd rather rest LeBron against the Magic and then play Kyrie and Love against the Magic. Because LeBron played just a ridiculous amount of minutes in that double overtime game against the Pacers. I think you can win with Kyrie and Love.
I don't know if they will, though, and it's, like, just not worth it. I just feel like if you're going to rest, I think a lot of people might disagree, but I like it when Lou just commits to the full, like, yeah, we're not winning this game, and just rest the whole big three.
If they rest... see, if they're going to rest the big three, they might as well rest Tristan, which they won't do, but that guy needs rest. I think if they play Kyrie and Love against the Magic, that's going to be enough. And shout out to David Zavak, who tweeted out, if they rest LeBron and Kyrie and Love can't get it done against the Magic, then they got bigger issues than the number one seed.
I guess. Yeah, I don't know. It's just one of those weird things. Rest is really hard to account for, and this is why, preferably, you have a pretty big lead for the one seed in the last week or two of the season. And you don't have to worry about this, and you can just sit guys for like four games in a row, and like really like give them like a mini All-Star break worth of time off and recovery.
Yeah, the Cavs are just great at putting themselves in ideal situations. That's what they're known for.
Yeah, they as David Griffin has said like 1,000 times, they are so frustratingly inconsistent. But what are you gonna do? That's the kind of the situation they have. My question is, do the Cavs even really want the one seed in terms of the road the playoffs would take them down? If you're the Cavs right now, you have the Raptors in the second round. Would you rather play the Raptors or the Wizards in the second round?
The Wizards.
See, I think it's kind of a toss-up.
Because I understand, like, Kyle Lowry's the big wild card. Like, he had surgery on his shooting hand. Who knows what he's going to be, but Toronto's been on a roll. Like, I think they've won like 7 out of their last 8 games or something like that. They've had one of the best defenses in the league since the All-Star break. And even if Kyle Lowry's limited, he's going to be an improvement. Kyle Lowry with a busted shooting hand is better than Corey Joseph, who they're rolling with now. So I think they're going to be a really tough team come playoffs. And Washington's struggling. Like, I just don't buy teams that are built around one player creating for everybody, especially when that player can't shoot. Like, if the Cavs...
But Beal is a better secondary creator than almost any team in the league has. I think you're underrating Beal's ability to create.
I probably am. I just don't buy it. Like, and they're struggling. Like, Washington has not been playing good basketball. Their defense has been terrible. They've been struggling lately, and unlike the Cavs, like, I don't think that they clearly have like a switch to flip. And the other thing is, if the Cavs can control the pace, as we've seen that they can do, I think that's kind of the one given heading into the playoffs, is that they're going to be able to dictate the pace more so than they have in the regular season. I really think that kills Washington's offense. Like, I think they really struggle if it's a slowed down game.
Yeah, I get that. I don't know. I just think when you look at the track record of the two teams, and yes, Toronto made the conference finals last year. I'm not trying to take away that run, but that's a team that hasn't really played a lot better in the postseason traditionally with that core roster. And when the Wizards make it, it feels like they outperform expectations. And I know Whitman's playoff Whitman and all that stuff is kind of out of the picture, but I just feel like that's a team that like, that does traditionally find an extra gear, and
I don't know if it's that.
Wizards are playing really well.
I don't know if it's that or if they've just played really bad teams when they do make it. Like, they...
Including the Raptors!
Yeah, I know, but it's... what I'm saying is that it's, like, the same situation as the Raptors, where they underperform, but they still kind of make it further than you'd expect with a team playing so poorly. Like, the time the Wizards made the second round, sure, they went pretty far, but they went far against an Atlanta team that people thought was good, but then got swept by the Cavs without Love and mostly without Kyrie. Like,
yeah.
Is that Atlanta underperforming, or is that the Wizards over, like, outperforming yeah. expectations?
It's tough to evaluate. Here's a question for you. Would you rather play the Raptors or the Bucks? Because the Bucks very well could win a playoff series against the Wizards.
The Bucks, and we discussed this last week, but the Bucks can make the Eastern Conference Finals. Like,
yeah,
if they play the Wizards round one and then they play Boston round two, I wouldn't be shocked to see the Bucks there. Like, the Bucks aren't blowing teams out, but they could just be a complete pain come playoffs. And yeah, if I had to rank teams, if we're assuming full health for Kyle Lowry, Toronto would be the team I'd like to see the least. Milwaukee would be second, then probably Washington, then Boston.
The Celtics disrespect.
And it's funny because
it's devastating.
Isaiah Thomas in an interview was saying, nobody believes in us, blah, 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 blah. Which
you're damn right.
Which normally I would make fun of. Like, I made fun of Dwayne Casey for trying to pull that last year in the playoffs. But Isaiah Thomas is 100% right. I'm like, yeah, you're right. If you want to use that as bulletin board material, I don't buy the Celtics.
Yeah, I get it. I get all the reasons you wouldn't. Their point differential is only plus 2.8. It's not like they're, blowing teams out in the regular season. And, like, you know, I just think, like, when... So, you know, Boston's operating at, like, 125%.
Yeah.
All the time. And, like, in the playoffs when everyone else meets them, and they're, like... Like, the Cavs' point differential is plus 3.3, yeah. Right? But you would expect them to be better than that differential.
Right, and it's funny because people are like, oh, this is going to be Boston's year. Cleveland's point differential is so bad. No team ever makes it with that bad of a point differential. And I'm like, Boston's is worse, and they're trying.
Yeah, Raptors have the best one. So, I don't know, I just feel like the Celtics, if they get like a point worse than their point differential, and everyone else gets a point better... as they, you know, in terms of like their quality of play, relative to everyone else, then, Yeah, I don't think they can, I don't think that they can lose in the first round. I've kind of softened on that. I just think the bottom of the East isn't very good. Especially if they're the one seed. If they're the two seed, it gets a little messier depending on how the matchups play out and depending on how that, the standings shake out, because they're really tight right now.
Yeah.
But,
it's just so hard to say which path I'd rather have when there's so much up in the air. Like, the seeding can change in such a big way that this last week is really going to be fascinating. Like, I can't recall it where 1 through 8 could shift so dramatically in just a week. So it really is going to be an exciting finish to the season.
Yeah, it should be fun. And it's nice to have stuff matter. Normally everything's sort of locked in. I mean, if you look out in the West, pretty much everything's locked in at this point. Maybe the Grizzlies and Thunder swap, if something crazy happens.
Yeah, they have
Clippers and Jazz swap, but like the matchups are fairly locked in. I really don't think the Nuggets are getting out of this, getting back in.
No, the Nuggets are toast.
After they accidentally created a juggernaut by trading Nurkic to the Blazers, which is hilarious.
I did not see that coming.
Nurkic and a first, which never made sense to me. And all the people who said, oh, well, they have too many players anyway. I was like, yeah, it doesn't mean you have to just burn set first-round picks on fire.
See, I thought Myers Leonard was better than Nurkic. Myers Leonard, Mason Plumlee, whatever. They're all the same.
Yeah, I just thought that Nurkic had a higher ceiling, and, like, he is the kind of a guy who just you need to, like, pay attention to. Like, he can't just be, like, I don't know if he's built to be, like, a 10th man on a team.
No.
Like, I think he's kind of cocky and, like, needs a little bit more
so he's TLC like Dion.
From his organization. Yeah, exactly. Like, he needs a little TLC from the organization to, like, show out, and I don't know. I just think there's a big difference between... like what Ainge is doing, like valuing his picks too much and like having to cut first round picks because they ran out of roster spots and stuff like that. And the Nuggets, like, there's a middle ground to be reached between that and just burning a first rounder on Mason Plumlee, who's also not a great fit with your roster.
He's a nice fit. Like, he's a good passing big man. He plays much better defense than Nurkic. Like,
he's the backup center. Like, I don't know. Like, cool. You traded a first-round pick for a guy who, if things are going well, should be playing, like, 18 minutes a game.
Hey, man, the Cavs could have used a backup center. I'd be all over.
Sure. Sure. Different situations.
Really?
The Cavaliers.
Denver and Cleveland, they're neck and neck. The only difference is...
I don't know. It's just crazy. If you have a star center, don't trade a first-round pick for a different center.
The only difference is Denver plays in the West. If they were in the East, they'd be a 2-seed.
Oh, yeah. 3-seed, even. Maybe even a 1-seed. Who's to say? The East does suck ass, though. Let's be clear.
I So does the West. The West has inflated records.
No, it's not as bad.
No, the West has inflated records because 8 through, like, whatever is just so terrible that it inflates the records of the top.
I feel like that was truer last season.
Ugh.
Brooklyn, Orlando, Philly.
Philly was good for a while.
Yeah, and the Kings have a better record than them.
Eh, that's only because Embiid got hurt.
I know, that's not the discussion, though. Like, the East is worse at the top, it's worse at the middle, and it's worse at the bottom.
Yeah.
Or it's as bad at the bottom.
Yeah, we'll see.
It's okay. It's okay, Justin.
No,
if the Cavs win the title, no one, I won't care.
That's true.
Last year we had a point, but
no. If the Cavs win the title, they won't care.
Yeah, exactly. So why would we? Why would we care?
One thing that's kind of encouraging to me. I don't know if you've noticed this, but over the last four games, starting with the game against the Spurs, the Cavs actually have been playing better defense. Like,
yeah, it felt like they kind of woke up in that second half, and they still couldn't hit shit.
Mm-hmm.
But
yeah, that's the problem. The offense has been the problem lately. They're now a mediocre defense,
which is a nice jump. I think they have been playing a little bit better. And like I think a function of it is playing not great offenses. Like Philly's offense is not potent at all.
Yeah, but they played good defense against the Spurs. Like their defense
and the Bulls. I thought they played good defense against the Bulls. Like the defense wasn't what lost them that game. Scoring 93 points is what lost them that game.
Over the last four games, their defensive rating is 13th, and that took a little bit of a hit after the Indy game.
Yeah, it's it's funny that we're like, yeah, they're up to 14th, but like that is like an enormous jump.
It is.
In a small sample, of course.
The problem is the offense has been 20th over that stretch.
Yeah, the offense just hasn't been great. There's no way around it. I mean, of course, the Spurs game really, like, tanks that. I wonder what it looks like if you take that out.
Yeah.
Because they scored 74 points in a regulation basketball game, and it's not 1993. So...
Or NCAA.
Yeah, no kidding. I think the defense has looked a lot better. I think that LeBron's looked a lot more engaged on that end.
Yeah.
As has Tristan Thompson.
Yeah.
I think those two, as the Cavs defense goes, like, you know, like you like to say, oh, well, the defensive rebounding with Love helps and JR is a little bit more consistent than Shumpert. But really, like, it just kind of feels like as LeBron and TT go defensively, that's like, that's how the Cavs go.
For sure. And I think it was Tim Cato that wrote about this, and I loved him. If you're not reading his stuff, you got to read his stuff. He's one of the best minds out there in basketball Twitter. But he wrote about how the Cavs are struggling, and it's not LeBron's fault. And 90% of it I agree with, but at the same time, there's that 10% that's saying, it's kind of on LeBron to set the tone defensively. Like
It is.
When he's not trying at all, and like he's just kind of throwing his arms up or complaining to refs or jogging back, like that kind of sets the tone for everybody else. So to some extent, it is on LeBron. And as we've seen recently, he starts trying and the rest of the team starts trying.
Yeah. I think it was Jake Clark over in Warriors Twitter that was talking about how like the Warriors still try really, really hard on defense in the regular season. And like, you look at the guy who their team's leader is Draymond Green, who does not have the same burden LeBron does offensively. So I don't want to get it like cut that I'd rather have Draymond or Draymond's a better leader. But like the fact that Draymond is kind of the heart and soul of their team and he's just killing himself on defense every possession kind of trickles down.
Oh, for sure.
And I think a big thing is like the Cavs, like look at Kyrie. Kyrie, like, you know, obviously like, takes himself very closely after LeBron. Like, LeBron's the leader of the team. He's going to model after him. And if Kyrie sees LeBron, you know, not giving his all on defense to maintain himself, what's Kyrie going to do?
Yeah.
He's going to follow the smart example of the best player in the league.
Yeah, and that's why when they play good teams, typically you see both LeBron and Kyrie play much better defense.
Yeah.
But Kyrie's kind of adopted the whole... we're playing the Pelicans right now. I don't really care. Or we're were playing against Ish Smith. I'm not going to give effort on Ish Smith, and that's going to hurt your season-long advanced stats, but it's also Ish Smith, and who really cares?
Yeah, so I just think that's a big factor, is LeBron does own some culpability for the Cavs' defensive struggles. I'm just not sure it actually matters, and we're not going to know about whether it matters until the playoffs start.
No, I completely agree. And I think part of the Cavs playing better defense, too, is because J.R. Smith is actually hitting shots. And when J.R. is happy and hitting shots, he starts playing defense and starts following LeBron's lead. Like, there's so many factors. And you mentioned it before, too. Kevin Love getting healthier, getting his conditioning back, and defensive rebounding, that also helps. Like, there are so many things that contributed to the Cavs sucking for a while there, that it's nice that we're seeing multiple factors start pointing in the right direction.
Yeah, I wanted to talk about JR because after having a pretty brutal year, literally the entire year, he was either hurt or playing horrible. And in his last three games, he's gone 4 of 7, 4 of 7, and 6 of 11 from 3.
Yeah, that's 56% from 3.
Yeah, and that's what you need. This Cavs offense becomes so much more dangerous when JR is shooting at a high percentage and at a high volume. The volume matters almost more than the percentages. I don't even think he needs to shoot like 50%.
No.
As long as he's shooting around 40.
Yeah.
If he's at high volume,
if he's
great.
Taking the 8.3 attempts he's taking over the last three games here, like, if he's shooting 38% even, like, that's going to draw so much attention, that has so much gravity, that it just completely changes the Cavs offense. It's something they don't have when Shumpert's on the court.
No, and you want, and I mean, you kind of need to get Kyle Korver back out there soon enough. Joe Vardon recently reported that he's switching to the Kyrie threes to get some extra support for the outside of his foot where that tendon's been bothering him. Because I think the Korver JR lineups are something we need to see work together for a while.
Yeah, I agree.
If you listen to the Road Tripping podcast with Channing and RJ, like RJ kept like needling Channing about how his role changed when Korver joined the team because they stopped running plays for Channing and started running plays for Korver. But like there is that reality of like, you know, like how are they going to share that floor, that space together? Like who's going to be darting off screens? Who's going to be camping out on the weak side? You know, just like how are they going to function together? And something I wanted to ask is, are they going to, if when Korver comes back, is Iman Shumpert going to come out of the rotation?
I don't think he's going to completely come out of the rotation, but I think it's going to be reduced pretty significantly. Like, I think he might eat into Richard Jefferson's minutes just a little bit to help keep him fresh, because it's really important that Richard Jefferson is healthy, rested going into the finals, because he's one of the bodies that you're going to have to throw at Durant. Like, nobody's really going to slow down Durant, but I think we're both on the same page that you got to keep LeBron on Draymond. Tristan's going to have to play against Durant in small ball lineups, but you really just can't afford to have LeBron on Durant all game, because that's a waste of energy, because Durant's going to put up numbers no matter what. You basically just have to throw body after body at him, fresh bodies, throw a bunch of different looks to kind of hope to limit him and just deal with him being kind of a bit of a poison pill to swallow.
Yeah, I totally agree. So it does make sense. And, you know, I do think, you know, I think a lot of people who don't like Shumpert, and like oftentimes very well earned, he's had, you know, he's very inconsistent. His defense isn't as good as it's advertised. His shooting is like hilariously streaky. I do wonder if they bump him out of that rotation or severely cut into it, if they're going to feel it in versatility when guarding point guards and shooting guards. Because Kyle Korver, for all his strengths, really should be guarding threes or even maybe non-offensive threat fours. He's not as fleet of foot as he used to be. Like, he can guard some twos, but he certainly can't guard ones. So if you're playing him as the two with Kyrie, basically eating Shumpert's minutes, That really adds a defensive burden to Kyrie's game that's not there normally, because they normally just shift Shumpert onto that point guard.
Right, exactly. Again, it would be so nice if Shumpert was as good defensively as his reputation.
Yeah, would be great.
Because he can play fantastic defense. Like the 2015 finals, he was absolutely everywhere. And he has quick, active hands. He has great length. He has every tool to play good defense. But he's not one of those guys where it's like, oh, well, he flips a switch and he plays good defense against top teams or in the playoffs.
No,
he played like bad defense last year in the playoffs. Like, it's been since the 2015 finals that he's played good defense.
Yeah, he's not really shown it, and you know, you want to keep throwing him out there, and I think the players believe in Shump a little more than the fans do.
Oh, definitely.
And Lou does.
Yeah.
For whatever reason, he's never really even been threatened to fall out of the rotation, as far as I can remember.
Part of that might be that they want to keep his value up in case if they do trade him.
Yeah, that's a good point, which I don't know how much playing is actually helping his value at this point, but it's just interesting. I wonder if, because I think a lot of Cavs fans think he's going to drop the hell out right away, and I just don't think he's going to. I think Lou likes his positional versatility, being able to guard the 1, 2, and 3.
Shout out to the homie Chops. He's going to be yeah, Chaps.
Chops is going to be ruined.
He's going to be Pete Chaps.
Yeah. Jesus Christ. I just think that this is, Lou's going to have a, you know, it's a good problem to have, but it's going to be tough for him to balance everything once Korver gets back, because Korver demands minutes, and he was playing really, really well before his foot started bothering him.
Man. This team is going to be so unprepared going into the playoffs.
Like, they really are, man.
There's things to be encouraged by, as we talked about. The defense is looking better, and Tristan's looking a little more spry. LeBron looks engaged. But, God, there's just still so many questions. There's so many things that they have to work out that it really is going to be a process, even in the playoffs.
Yeah, I mean, I guess, like, Cavs fans probably should just be enormous Atlanta Hawks fans to lose and drop to that 7th seed. They're 2-8 in their last 10 without Paul Millsap. It's looking like they honestly could fall to the 8th seed if it gets much worse, and I don't think you want to play. The Bulls will be annoying just because they have shot-making and Jimmy Butler and a star. They, you know. The Heat would be annoying because they play really well. So I think you really want to see the Hawks in that first round just to work some kinks out for a few games.
Yeah, true.
It's going to be tough. There's no way around it. They're going to have to figure some stuff out. They're going to have to flip a switch. They're going to have to play lineups that haven't played a lot together. But I think this is something we've kind of known for a while.
Yeah, it's true.
And if they had to do this, then at least guys like JR and Love might be rounding into form sooner rather than later.
Yeah, and Love has been looking better recently. Like, he's missing a couple open shots and stuff, but he's still active on the boards. So he isn't shooting a terrible percentage or anything like that. Overall, I'm pretty encouraged with how Love looks. Like, he made a lot of big plays in double overtime against the Pacers, and I think that kind of speaks to him getting his conditioning back. He's still playing well. Was it you or was it someone else that... I think it might have been Jeff Nomina who had brought up that you can tell Kyrie and LeBron are tired because they're giving Love shots in double OT.
I think that was Jeff, but it was amazing. Yeah, that, like, if you needed to know that they were gassed, it was like, let's run a play for Kevin.
Yeah. But he delivered, and I mean
Kevin's still pretty freaking good at basketball. Yeah. People like to forget
he's still one of the best power forwards in the game, like, and he creates opportunities for himself too. Like, he got a clutch put back, and he's really fighting. Like, that's the thing that shows me that he's close to being back to 100%, is that he's got, when he's fighting for a rebound, it's that second and third attempt that he still has his legs under him, and he eventually comes away with the ball. It would be nice if he got the whistle as frequently as others do in that situation, but he does fight for the ball, and when it's not working, he secures the ball, he passes it out. Like, he's a smart, aware player that finds ways to contribute even when his shot isn't falling, which we saw in last year's finals.
Yep. I think he's looking good. I think that JR is looking good. What are your thoughts on Darren Williams in his tenure so far with the Cavaliers? I have some thought, but I'd like to hear what you think.
I think he's been a little underwhelming if you were expecting, like, Darren Williams. He can actually dribble a basketball, and he makes smart passes. He's not hitting a ton of his shots. I don't like when he kind of tries to do a Kyrie impression. But overall, I'm happy he's on the team, and I think he is contributing. I maybe he has a bit bigger of a role than I expected, but I'm not as disappointed as some without him.
I'm surprised that they haven't let him run more pick and roll.
Yeah.
That is my take.
That would be nice. I would appreciate it if they did that more.
I get why you don't, because he plays in a lot of second units with either Kyrie or LeBron, and you don't want to take the ball out of those guys' hands.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, that is this guy's bread and butter. And that's what he does really, really well. That's what makes him still a good NBA player, is his ability to make decisions out of the pick and roll.
Right.
And I don't think that that's something they can't continue to do. I think that it takes burden off of LeBron. I mean, think about how much pick and roll Dele ran with Tristan.
Yeah, I know.
Second units last year. And it was weirdly effective because Dele. And because Tristan's an amazing finisher out of the pick and roll. I think there's room in these units to do that. I know that I've noticed they're really starting to rerun that pet play that they developed last year,
mm-hmm.
where Richard Jefferson sets a pin down for Darren, who sets a screen for LeBron. And it's a really effective play. And those plays are showcasing Darren's ability to make decisions and find LeBron for wide open dunks more often than not. So I just think that they need to put Darren in more decision making roles.
Yeah, I agree. Because his decision making has been good. Like, I think he does make smart passes.
Yeah, I agree. I think he's playing fairly well. He's not turning the ball over a lot for the Cavs, which is nice. He's typically getting a two or three assists every time he hits the floor. I just think that they need to give him the ball, or he's not Dele.
Yeah.
I think they're kind of using him like they use Dele.
Yeah, as a combo guard. Okay,
yeah, spot up, shoot threes, combo guard, play defense, and then, you know, some secondary or maybe tertiary playmaking, and I just don't think that's the way you want to deploy him to best maximize him. And I do think that this often is a thing that we do with Kevin Love, where we say, oh, we need to maximize Kevin, but, like, is that best for the roster?
Mm-hmm.
I don't think this is one of those situations.
No.
I think they need to maximize Darren.
It drives me nuts when they play Kyrie, Darren, and LeBron together, because I'm like, that's just not divvying up your playmaking, like, your only playmaker as well. Like, that's just poor resource allocation, in my opinion.
Yeah, and Darren's not a great shooter.
Yeah, he's shooter. He's fine, but he's not.
Like, there's no value to him being out there, because with Kyrie, LeBron, and him on the floor, there's just not a ton of excuses to give Darren the ball.
Yeah, and to some extent, like,
like, him running pick and roll in those lineups is not worth maximizing him, right?
Right. No, not at all. And the funny thing is, like, maybe, and this is why it's tough to evaluate the team, maybe you don't play him in those minutes if JR wasn't struggling with his shot, Kyle Korver was out, and Amon Shumpert can be borderline unplayable.
That's a good point, and that's something that, you know, this is why you have to be careful when you play backseat coach.
Yeah.
Because you can't always account for that that reality that Lou has to deal with stuff. And also the fact that Lou is, like, a pretty active experimenter.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he likes to try stuff out and do weird things where we're like, what the hell is that lineup?
he does. And I appreciate that. Like, I think I like the fact that he does look to try things in the regular season. And you can tell that there's, like, an intent. It's like, all right, something that we can fall back on if we need it in the playoffs. Like, I don't think they... I think they're prepared for the playoffs in some ways because they approach it that way. And then in other ways, just because of the multiple situations that have happened this season, they are less prepared than they've ever been.
You know, it's funny. Not only do the Cavaliers flip a switch in the postseason, so does Tyronn Lue. Like, think about how frustrated like the entire like Cavs fan base was about how much how many minutes Timofey Mozgov was getting throughout the whole regular season.
Yeah.
Even after the Fry trade, we're like, why? Why is this happening? Why is he getting these minutes? And then one game into the playoffs, Lou was like, yeah, Timo's not playing the rest of the year.
Yeah, yeah, it's just over.
Yep, we're not doing that. So, like, you know, like, even though he doesn't have a huge track record, the benefit of the doubt is in Lou's corner. So, even though, you know, there's things to nitpick, you have to kind of look big picture and realize that he typically has a pretty good plan.
Yeah, it's true. Yeah, I think if you look at the track record, you should have some confidence in the people that are in place running this team. They won a championship last year.
Yep. I think it's really easy to forget that.
It's,
and we should stop doing that.
Yeah, and while we're at it, sign David Griffin. Because that would be, if they lost David Griffin somehow, like, that would be one of the most devastating things to me. Because I just have complete confidence in his ability to maximize whatever assets they have.
Yeah. What do you think about LeBron kind of going to bat for him?
I like it.
And something that I talked about in my piece for Fearless Sword, or my reaction to it, is, like, you rarely see LeBron so aggressively coming out against the perception that he runs the team.
Yeah. Yeah, I think in general LeBron just doesn't really care what people think. But
yeah. I just think it was interesting because he even jumped into the specifics. He's like, you know, like, I don't have the time to, like, be checking on, like, trade exceptions and cap sheets and draft and college scouting. And it's like hearing him, like, lay it out, like, made it even more obvious that, like, well, duh, he's not doing all this.
Yeah.
It's like... Like, they're calling him before they make moves.
Yeah, and it's funny because
if
people think LeBron legitimately is the GM, then you also have to think that he has, like, some sort of personality disorder. Because he wouldn't be sitting there saying, hey, we need a point guard. Hey, you should sign JR, and, like, complaining for months on end if he had the power to do it.
Yeah, I agree.
Like, that's simple. Like, it... There's no way that if LeBron was literally running the team and allowed to just make whatever decision he wants, that that would happen. Like, he wouldn't need to do that.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, he would have to have a Jekyll and Hyde kind of life, like a mental issue, mm-hmm. if he was doing this. So, yeah, I think it's a good thing that he supported Griffin, because Griffin... is really the perfect GM for this kind of team.
I agree.
We haven't seen Griffin really do a lot in the draft. But the thing is, that's not really what the Cavs need from him. Like, a team that has Tristan Thompson, LeBron, Kevin Love, Kyrie, they're always going to be capped out. They're going to die capped out.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and
but he also means, yeah, to be
it's
fair
about being creative on the margins. That's true. That's the whole point of the job.
Yeah, and to be fair, he's also drafted one of the greatest players of all time who just hasn't come over yet in Seti Osman.
Jesus Christ. So yeah, I just think he's a perfect GM for the team. I'm moving on.
You're not going to challenge me on my Seti takes?
I'm not taking the bait.
Just for the record, I think Shump's gone this summer and Seti fully gets integrated into the rotation. I'm all about it.
Well, here's hoping. That is funny with Chetty, because, like, you just, like, there's so much known on the Cavs roster that just, like, a hint of unknown is the most tantalizing thing in the world.
And also it feels like a connection to the former Cavs teams that I've rooted for, where it's always that one weird guy. Not the one weird guy, but you just always... someone to pour over Draft Express and check out these European highlights and stuff like that. And he's playing well, and he played great in international competition, which got me even more hyped. Seeing a guy that's like 6'9", guard Dennis Schroeder, and then switch on to Dirk and defend them both well against Germany was like enough. That little glimpse is all I needed to get excited. I don't know if he's actually going to be good, but... by all accounts, he's kind of like a small forward Tristan that just will fill in. He will fill in where
I don't know if he's actually going to be good, but by all accounts, he's Tristan Thompson.
No. I meant like a small forward Tristan where he's not going to be a featured guy. He's not great at that, but he does so many little things, and he is an intelligent off-ball player and a good guy in transition. So that's the type of player that they need.
Yeah. I mean, and like you consider the fact that he's an athlete, he's an okay finisher, okay distributor, and you know, I just think that you know he might not be great, but he's definitely going to be at least Draymond Green.
You're such a dick. Speaking of almost Draymond Green, what's happened to Derek Williams?
He turned back into a pumpkin.
But he hasn't even had the chance to suck.
Yeah, I think that. He was starting to suck before they got healthy. That is my opinion. That's my official on the record opinion. Like when he got to the Cavs, he was literally setting screens, diving to the rim really hard. And if he didn't get a dunk, he wasn't really shooting.
Mm-hmm. And he somehow was hitting some threes, which was nice.
He was hitting a few threes here and there, but that wasn't really what I thought made him effective. Then he started shooting a lot more threes. Trying to dribble a lot more and not being as locked in defensively. So I just think this is like, that's kind of the Derek Williams experience. Like, he's never going to be consistent, and there's a reason that teams move on. Like, I thought there was, you know, a chance that maybe the Cavs found someone who could be part of their future rotation that's a little bit younger, and there's no guarantee he's not that. But he certainly took a few steps back even before the team got healthy and bumped him out of the rotation. And to be honest, I kind of always thought he was the odd man out of the rotation, even if he was playing well.
Yeah, which would make sense, because they actually do have a deep roster when it is healthy. And we're talking about Amon Shumpert falling out. And Amon, for all his faults, he's a lot better than Derek Williams. But I just thought that Williams did bring some things that I liked. Like, he is athletic. He did play at a higher pace, which kind of forced the rest of the team to play quicker, which... I think they need to do. But yeah, I guess it makes sense that he has fallen out of the rotation to some extent, but he's played relatively well, at least offensively, in the minutes he's got recently. Like, he's only really had one bad game against the Clippers, but you kind of expect someone like that to struggle when there's no other competent players on the floor.
Yeah, I don't know. I just think it's one of those things where he is the odd man out because this team's talented. And he's not going to knock Richard Jefferson out of the rotation. He's not going to knock Channing Frye out of the rotation.
It's true.
He's not going to knock Kevin Love or Tristan Thompson out. He's just the fifth big.
Yeah, it's true. Well, it's at least we had like that Derek Williams moment of glory for a few games.
Mm-hmm. It was fun, and there's no reason. I think the Cavs should absolutely consider... you know, keeping him around next year if he's affordable, and just in case they have any surprise retirements.
He was pretty high on that Magic board of players that they want to go after, though. Did you see that?
I'm sure his. I didn't see his name was on there, but I'm sure $15 million a year will be nice for him in Orlando.
It was second from the top in one of their categories. I don't know if that
everything
means anything,
about that
but that's...
just outs them as a trash organization. The fact that it exists, the fact they just had their agent in their room with their big plans. Like, what is that?
That was so amazing. Like, that's just peak. That's what would have happened to the Cavs at some point. Like, if things didn't turn around, like if David Griffin isn't running the show, that's why they need to keep David Griffin, because he's given us a taste of what a competent organization can be. And I'm not willing to go back to the Chris Grant scouting reports and all the other gong shows that came along with the former Cavs teams.
Yep. It's ridiculous. And it's still just crazy that David Griffin was Chris Grant's assistant. He was his helper.
I think it was Windhorst that had said that when Chris Grant would try to get a trade done, he would talk to the team. They'd get so frustrated that they end up dealing with Griffin, who would finish the deal. Like, he would close it.
What a weird world. And like,
which, if that was true, you, like, the trades were the only thing, the only redeeming quality of Chris Grant's tenure.
Mm-hmm. I remember being kind of skeptical of Griffin when the hiring happened, because I was like, this guy's like Chris Grant's guy. Chris Grant was terrible. What are we doing? But, you know, that just shows you that, like, sometimes organization, like, I think there's this sometimes assumption that organizational structures make sense, mm-hmm. and like that the best guy is in charge in the organization, and the second best guy is second in command, and so on and so forth. And that's just so rarely the case.
Yeah, I mean, anybody that works full time knows that that's true.
Like, I think I was just starting my first job out of school when that happened, and like, you know, like just from talking to people, you realize that that's just not how it works. Like, there's going to be incompetent people at every level of every organization. Mm-hmm. And there's going to be really competent people working under incompetent people. And it's just,
it's true.
Sometimes it works out in your favor, and Griffin has been a godsend.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, just because someone has a podcast doesn't mean they're intelligent, right?
Couldn't agree more. It's just, that's a stark reality of what we're doing here. And it's stunning that anyone would ever listen.
But for whatever reason they do, which we both really appreciate it. As always, if you enjoy the podcast, leave us a review on iTunes. Give us a 5-star review. Actually, how about we have some fun with this? If you leave a review, mention what moment in time you realized either one of us is trash. We will read the funniest submissions on there. But yeah, leave us a review, subscribe on iTunes or however you want to. If you listen to us on Almighty Baller Radio or on Dash Radio, we appreciate that as well. I believe this will be the first episode on Dash. So for those listening, I hope you enjoyed our rambling and whatever we want to call this. But for Carter and myself, appreciate it. And as always, go Cavs.